But today is VE Day. The war is
over. The newly crowned queen waves from the balcony.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has landed.
Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Marx Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Marx Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Capital at risk.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Advice Show. From advice to practice management, this podcast will give you UK and global insights into the financial planning profession. I'm Nicola, Chief Reporter at New Model Advisor, and today I'm joined by Claire Moffat, who is Head of Technical at Royal London, and she's here to answer some burning questions any advisor listeners might have ahead of the LTA being scrapped next month. So hello, Claire, and thank you very much for coming in to Citywire Studios.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's great to have you. Before we kind of jump into some of the big questions that you've been hearing from advisors, I think, first of all, can you just give a sense of, you know, what the mood has been like in the advice profession on this topic since that announcement was made about a year ago?
So I think it is the question that's asked about most. So everything that all of these changes and definitely kind of my team's out and about, we're talking about it on webinars. It is the thing that we are being asked about so much. The complexity, the changes, the fact that we've got most of the information now, but we're still getting kind of bits and pieces of information. And this is a time of year that normally advisors would be thinking about helping clients get larger pension contributions in before the end of the tax year. But actually, they're having to think about their clients who maybe kind of, you know, actually everything was fine. They're at the other stage. They're happily in drawdown, or they're, you know, and they're actually having to look at their book of clients and think, what, you know, are there any implications for some of the things that we're going to talk about today? Mm-hmm. So it's always a busy time for advisors this time of year, but I think it's even busier this year. And it's a lot, you know, there's such a lot of information. Busier time.
So before we started recording the podcast, you made the point that 10 years ago today, the pension freedoms were announced. That was in 2014. So it feels quite timely in a way that we're talking about this. Claire, where were you 10 years ago when that announcement was made, on that budget day? Tell me about that.
It's funny the things you remember, isn't it? And I can remember almost every moment. It was the last 5 minutes of the budget. I was working at Prudential at that time in the technical team there. We always listened to the budget as a team, and we just were, you know, everyone was astounded. The whole industry was astounded because very, very few people knew about this. And I just remember kind of sitting and we all looked at each other thinking, what does this mean? And yeah, it's one of those days in my career that's, yeah, I'll never forget that day, just thinking, what are the implications of this actually? What does this mean for advisors? What does it mean for clients? And the next day I had to give an advisor webinar. We hadn't,
oh wow,
I think we'd, I'm not gonna,
a big job.
It was a big job. And you know, say we had, I can't remember the numbers exactly, but say, you know, before the budget, we maybe had kind of 500 people registered or something, and it went up to something like 1,500, and the pressure was on.
Wow.
And I'll always remember my colleague, Graham, who was on the tax and trust side, did kind of the first part of the budget. And he said, I feel a bit like I'm the best supporting actor because I kind of, everyone's actually waiting to hear the pensions kind of information. So I felt the pressure was on that day. Actually,
there
was a lot happening.
And as you say, it sounds like a lot of the implications were sort of yet to be understood. So I imagine there was only sort of so much that you could explain to advisors at that time. And
that's, you know, that's always the way, because we're always waiting on a finance bill. There was another act as well that we had. We had a year, though, to think about that and the implications of that, because it came in the following year. Whereas when we're thinking about the changes that are happening on the 6th of April, we've actually not really had draft legislation for very long. We might have heard about it this time last year, but we didn't get a lot of the information until relatively recently. So, and that's why probably this has felt, it's been a bit more difficult for everybody to digest, the industry to digest, because we haven't had that full picture of how everything is going to work.
Yeah. Well, it's really great to have you here today to just kind of clarify that the important things that advisors do need to know and what we do know. First of all, could you just recap for us what the LTA is being replaced by and how different that will be?
Yeah, so it's going to be replaced by something called the lump sum allowance and the lump sum and death benefit allowance. So we talk about the LSA now and the LSDBA. We always have horrible acronyms, don't we, in pensions. So these are the limits on how much you can take tax-free as a lump sum. So either during your lifetime or that your beneficiaries can take tax-free as a lump sum on your death before age 75. So that's kind of the key change, that this is about these tax-free lump sums. So the LSA, well, that's going to be £268,275, and the LSDBA is £1,073,100. And of course, these are very familiar to people because that's the amount of the lifetime allowance and, you know, kind of 25% of the lifetime allowance. But that's where then it sort of differs after that point. If someone does have protection from the lifetime allowance, then they can have higher amounts. So if they've applied when the lifetime allowance was reducing, they have fixed protection, they have individual protection, then that will differ as well. And I think it is really key that this is only about taking lump sums. So you use these allowances in a different way from people would have used up the lifetime allowance. So if we think about someone who crystallised £800,000and, you know, cut now, before the 6th of April, then they would have used £800,000 of their lifetime allowance. But actually now they'll only have used £200,000 of their lump sum allowance and of their lump sum and death benefit allowance. So that's the kind of fundamental change.
Yeah, okay. I think just to zoom out for a second and look at this more broadly, because when this scrapping of the LTA was first announced, there was some positive sentiment, I think, among advisors about, you know, to an extent, the purpose of it, right, which was to encourage people to save more into their pensions and work for longer. But, you know, with these new allowances and things that have sort of replaced it, do you think that sentiment is still there? And is that something that you think advisors have been seeing or sort of encouraging?
So I think the real... there are real positives for some clients. And, you know, we know that one of the reasons for this happening was because we were finding there was a lot of doctors retiring early from the NHS because of the lifetime allowance and because of the annual allowance. And of course, the annual allowance increased last year too. So I think the number of retirements from the NHS has reduced a bit. So it's worked kind of on that front.
Mm-hmm.
I think to your everyday person in the street, they will never have these types of money in their pension. So it's not something that most people will ever have to worry about. They'll not reach that £268,275 of a lump sum allowance.
Mm-hmm.
But for people who have advisors, then often, you know, they could, this is something that advisors need to think about and to know about and to know about the changes because it will be impacting maybe quite a lot of their clients, and especially maybe clients who have carried out DB transfers in the past, because actually, you know, you could quite easily have sort of over £1 million in a DB transfer. So yeah, it's certainly been something which there's more people now can maybe higher earners who will be encouraged to pay into pensions there, and that kind of that policy intention of actually helping doctors to stay in the NHS. Well, hopefully that is working through. But, you know, I think it's one of these things that kind of time will tell how this works out, really.
Yeah. Just on that, so on the lump sum allowance, the
£268,275.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. So what will reduce that from when the changes...
So pension commencement lump sum, so that will be taken off the lump sum allowance and the lump sum and death benefit allowance, and also the tax-free element of an UFPOLS, an uncrystallised fund pension lump sum.
Mm.
What doesn't count are small lump sums and trivial or winding up lump sums. So they'll not reduce it. And that's similar to how they're treated right now.
Okay.
So it's really just those kind of two tax-free elements.
Okay, okay. We touched on this a bit, I think, but just to clarify, if someone has taken benefits before, so before next month, how will this impact their new allowances? What else do they need to know?
So there's a standard calculation, and that places this value on kind of PCLS that's taken before the 6th of April. So you look at the lifetime allowance used, and that's a percentage. So and then you apply that to the current lifetime allowance amount, which is £1,073,100, and then you divide that answer by four. So if we look at someone who's used 50% of the lifetime allowance, you would take 50% of that £1,073,100, which £536,500.
That came straight out of the top of your head.
I had that written down. That's, then you're going to divide that by four. And that amount is, again, I worked this out, is £134,137.50. And then that's what you're going to deduct from that £268,275. So that then means you know what you're going to have from the 6th of April. So that's the standard calculation. And for most people, that will be fine because most people did get 25% of their fund as tax-free cash pension commencement lump sum. Where it might differ is if someone has received less than 25% of their benefits as a tax-free lump sum. And if someone is in that position, then they can substitute. So that standard amount, they can apply for something called a transitional tax-free amount certificate again. It's a horrible acronym of TFAC. But it's really crucial that that's applied for before the first relevant benefit crystallisation event after the 6th of April, 2024. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is really crucial. And that's what advisors are looking out for just now. Do we have people who are entitled to or are entitled to more tax-free cash because they didn't get that full amount? And should they be applying for one of these certificates? And are they doing anything? Like, are they taking a mixture of tax-free cash and drawdown every month that we have to stop to then apply for the certificate to make sure that they still are entitled to it?
Okay. And this is probably a stupid question, but why is making sure that that application is sort of filed before the first crystallisation event so important?
So in the past, and kind of, or as we are currently now, we would have had lots of benefit crystallisation events. Every time someone took any money from their pension, you go into drawdown, you take up tax-free cash, these kind of, when you are 75 on death, for example. But it's only taking tax-free cash that's important. And these are called these relevant benefit crystallisation events. So just as the kind of the rules have been set down is that you can only apply for one of these certificates before then you're going to have one of these relevant benefit crystallisation events. So for it's one of these scenarios, and I don't know if it's worth me kind of talking through who might benefit from having one of these certificates, because I think that helps. So
you guys think saying it's not, it's probably the minority, right?
But yes,
probably still worth us covering.
I think probably the most common example is someone who took benefits from a defined benefit scheme, and that's because of the way that it's worked out. And so we would often see, say someone has a pension of £30,000 a year, then they might have been entitled to pension commencement lump sum of £90,000, so three times their income. Mm-hmm. Now at that time, that would have used up, the way it was calculated, £690,000 of the lifetime allowance, and they would have got kind of, but of that, 25% would have been actually over £172,000. They didn't get that. They got £90,000. So for somebody in that position, if they have defined contribution pension savings as well, then they might really benefit from getting one of these transitional tax-free amount certificates, because it gives them an entitlement to more tax-free cash, mm-hmm. because they didn't get it. So they would be entitled to do that. And I think if we think about groups of people, again, back to doctors, then what you find is sometimes people who did retire, they took their pension, they wouldn't have got that 25%. It would have been a lower amount. Then they maybe are doing private work, so they might have money in defined contribution pensions. It actually means they could have an entitlement to more tax-free cash.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, if they aren't taking any money out, so they're not taking a tax-free cash amount, then there's not as much of a rush. But if you've got someone who, so they were a doctor, they retired from the NHS scheme, they did do some private work, then they want to start taking money from that defined contribution pension, they might have set up drip feed drawdown or phase drawdown, mm. where you take an amount every month of tax-free cash and an amount of drawdown income. And that's what might need to be stopped to allow application for that certificate to then give them that entitlement to a higher amount of tax-free cash. So it's kind of, that's probably a very good example of someone who should be thinking about applying for one of these certificates. If you've only got DB income and you've no other pensions, defined contribution pensions, then you don't need to worry as much about them.
Okay.
So it is kind of quite particular to that. You might have had a disqualifying pension credit, so there could have been a divorce. So that used up lifetime allowance. So if you've got a couple who are very kind of wealthy couple getting divorced,
yeah,
that used up lifetime allowance, but they don't have any tax-free cash entitlement. So it actually gives them the entitlement to receiving some tax-free cash now as well. And probably the other main one is anyone who took their benefits when the lifetime allowance was £1 million. So we had a point when the lifetime allowance was £1 million, 25% of that would have been £250,000. That was the most they could get at that time. If they have other pension savings, then they would be entitled to that extra amount, because now you can get £268,275. So
right, okay. So anyone taking benefits when the LTA was £1 million, the divorce example, and it was basically if a client has a DC and a DB pension pot, and there was something else you said. Any client who has DC and DB pension pot, what was it called? It was drip feed drawdown.
Yeah. So if they are kind of taking, it's not as much of a worry if they perhaps use their defined contribution pot just to take out, it's maybe a bit of a kind of pot of fun money, that's the holiday money comes out of that pot, and you know, I'm not taking out regularly. It'd be someone who's taking out regularly, because that's the issue that's set up. We need to stop that while we apply for one of these transitional tax-free amount certificates. So that's probably the main ones.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that probably there's one other where someone has gone through an age 75 test. Lifetime allowance would have been reduced, but they still have some pension commencement lump sum to take. But I'd say those are the main ones. And so when we've been speaking to advisors, they are looking through their books of clients to see, actually, does this apply to anyone? Who should we be thinking about?
Okay, so LTA being scrapped next month, basically, is LTA protection of any benefit now or moving forward?
Yeah, so if you think about someone who had, say, fixed protection 2016, so and that was in place before the 15th of March 2023, and that's because that's when we had the budget, the 15th of March 2023. Mm. So from the 6th of April, they'll have their lump sum allowance will be £312,500, because they've got a higher amount because they had protection. Mm. And their lump sum and death benefit allowance will be £1.25 million. They could be paying contributions or have a defined benefit accrual, but thinking about kind of in the DC world, they'd be able to pay contributions from the 6th of April 2023 without losing that protection. So that's a change, and that's a really valuable benefit for those high earners. You know, and we were kind of talking about people who might benefit, people who stopped paying into pensions because they had protection from the lifetime allowance, they are now able to pay into pensions again. And we know that pensions are a really tax efficient wrapper. So actually being able to pay into that pension, it's inheritance tax friendly, that's a real benefit for them. And I suppose the other thing that advisors are looking for is there anyone eligible to apply for fixed or individual protection 2016? Because if they've not applied, they can do that right now, but they only have until the 5th of April 2025 to apply.
So some of the changes that will happen from next month will have different impact based on a client's age. I think the key one is 75. So what happens at age 75 from next month?
So where we are right now in kind of March 2023, it's a funny one. When you're 75, it's kind of a congratulations, you're 75. We might be deducting a tax charge from your pension. And I often think if people sort of looked at their pensions, some people do look at their pensions all the time, or they're, you could be looking at it one day and then wonder why 25% kind of has disappeared. If you've got a lot of pensions, you know, if you're going to be impacted by the lifetime allowance. And that's what happened. Age 75 was a benefit crystallisation event.
Yeah.
But the new allowances only apply to tax-free lump sums. So actually having funds of a certain amount at age 75 aren't an issue. So that's gone. That kind of...
That's great.
Yeah. That birthday gift or not has disappeared. But it's still an important age when we think about planning. And that's because of the taxation of death benefits. So when you're from your 75th birthday, if you die after that, then your death benefits will be subject to income tax at the marginal rate of the beneficiary. And also if you die and you've not taken any tax-free cash, then that's kind of lost at that point in time. So because your beneficiary doesn't have that as an option. So it's still an important age for my kind of planning angle and advisors in the run-up to someone becoming 75, we'd be talking to them about things like kind of death benefits. Have you taken tax-free cash, PCLS? Because actually they might be better taking it out and using it in a tax-efficient way, maybe kind of gifting it, doing other things with it. Mm. Some people do like to just leave it in the pension, but it is then not going to, you know, you're going to lose that kind of 25% tax-free entitlement. So that's, I think, the main change at age 75.
Can I ask how much you are seeing advisors, or advisors' clients making that decision based on the changes?
I think most people do still take their 25% tax-free cash.
But yeah.
I mean, the worst thing you can do, though, is take your 25% tax-free cash, especially from a large pot of money, and leave it in a bank account, because then it is just subject to inheritance tax.
Mm.
And people with large pension pots are the people who, you know, potentially have other assets as well. That's not always the case, but could be the case. But if you do something with it, if you are then thinking about using it in a tax efficient way, you're gifting it, you're putting it into trust, you're doing something else with it, then that's when, you know, taking it out and using it, you might just want to spend it on yourself. But a lot of people, kind of, we find are actually thinking about kind of, well, what do I do with this? What's best on a family basis? We know advisors are advising more and more on a family basis and an intergenerational basis. So it's definitely something to think about. But for some people, they just think, well, actually, I don't really want to do anything with it. And while it's sitting in that wrapper, it is an inheritance tax. Normally, it's in an inheritance tax efficient environment.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that's really good to know. So this is something we've touched on, but again, I think just to clarify, is there anything kind of they really need to know about the difference in the tax treatment when it comes to death benefits paid from funds crystallised before and after the 6th of April?
So before the 6th of April, then benefits would have been tested against that lifetime allowance. But they're not tested against the lump sum and death benefit allowance after the 6th of April 2024. So from a provider point of view, then we need to kind of earmark or separate out these benefits because of the difference in the way they're being treated.
Mm-hmm.
And because the key point here is that LSDBA, well, it's, you know, the maximum tax-free lump sum that a beneficiary can take on the death of a member before 75. And if a beneficiary does choose to take more than that, then they will have marginal rate tax on anything above that allowance. But if any benefits have been crystallised before the 6th of April 2024, then they won't count here. And that's because they've already been through these tests.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think the key point is, you know, when we think about death benefits, this is only about tax-free lump sums. So someone could have £2 million in a pension, and if they die under 75, if their beneficiaries move it all into drawdown, then there's not an issue in terms of lump sum and death benefit allowance. It's only if they decided to take it out as a lump sum.
Got it.
So from a tax point of view, it's about doing kind of it in the most tax efficient way for the beneficiaries as well. Also, I should say, if the beneficiaries want to buy an annuity, so you might have a spouse that would want to set up a dependence annuity. So there wouldn't be that income tax charge for anything above that lump sum and death benefit allowance if it is taken in as drawdown.
But it's
only about the lump sum. So that's kind of the key point.
Yeah. Okay. And that's, that's, again, I'm sure good to hear, and means it won't kind of be a big change for a lot of clients. So what about pension death benefits and how they will be taxed on death after 75?
So there's no change to that. So that exists exactly as it does currently. It's still going to be the same way after the 6th of April 2024. And that's because when someone died after age 75, it wasn't a benefit crystallisation event. It was only kind of under 75. So it's not had an impact. So it doesn't matter if the death benefits are from crystallised or uncrystallised, or they're taken as a lump sum or they're taken as income, they'll be taxed. All of them will be taxed at the marginal rate of the beneficiary. And, you know, death benefits, it's something we spoke about 10 years since pension freedoms, and actually the kind of passing on of wealth, that's what, you know, we see that happening more and more, that people are leaving their pension, they're using other assets which would attract inheritance tax first before they use their pension. And then we're seeing pensions being passed on to, you know, split up between different family members, you know, maybe some for the spouse, for children, grandchildren. So they're being kind of passed on in different ways, and it's only when they take money out. So if it goes into beneficiaries drawdown, it won't attract income tax until you take money out of that drawdown fund. And so if you take it, if you've left it to kind of children, then they could be taking up, you know, out up to their personal allowance, and there wouldn't be income tax on that. So it's always about your marginal rate of tax. So it can be taken in a tax efficient way.
Again, you did touch on it before, but could you say a bit more about why this is significant, given the patterns you're seeing in, or advisors are seeing in, you know, what clients want to do with that pension money? You know, what are the trends there you're increasingly seeing?
Yeah. That does go back to pension freedoms, because actually giving that opportunity to for wealth to be passed on. So people will think about using other assets first, and they will try and, I mean, some people will have to live on drawdown, but especially people who are impacted by these things that we've been talking about today, they tend to have very large pension pots. And as people get much older, they're not spending it as much, or they might have some DB pension as well, and they've got kind of a large DC pot as well. So so we are seeing that more people are passing on that wealth. And I think there's, you know, the intergenerational wealth transfer, it does work on a kind of family basis. It can be really tax efficient. And it used to be kind of pre-pension freedoms, you know, you would see on expression of wish forms the spouse's name, and that was just kind of the way it worked. But now we see it split between different family members, and, you know, different people can use it in different ways. And I always use myself as an example, because I think that, you know, the house goes to my husband. I've got three children, and I would, you know, if I died today, hopefully not, but if I died today, then I would want my husband to remarry at some point. Not too soon, obviously, but, you know. But I've split up my pension death benefits. I've kind of expressed a wish that it's split between my husband and my three children. And that's because if I left it all to him and he remarried and then he died first, then a new spouse could get my pension money, which I see very personally to me as my pension money. So actually I'm kind of thinking, well, I would like some of that to go to my children as well, to kind of help them out. And that's the kind of conversations that advisors will be having with clients. Like, what would you like to happen? Who do you want to benefit? And because if it's set up and it's scheme administrator discretion, then it means that it's not normally subject to IHT, and, you know, it's not governed by the will. So the will can kind of dictate what happens to other assets, and the pension can be dealt with quite differently as well. So I think there's more choice available. These kind of conversations are happening with clients. Advisors will be talking about, you know, it doesn't just have to be going to a spouse. Like, what do you want to happen?
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I think Some people want control from beyond the grave, and so they would set up things like spousal bypass trusts because they want trustees to be kind of, you know, making sure that their wishes are almost followed. And that's what some people want. Different people have kind of different ideas of what will happen. You know, I always talk about the example from a good few years ago when there was an expression of wish form that said that I want my wife to receive my death benefits, but she's not allowed to spend it all on shoes and handbags. And I think, I really hope she did spend it all on shoes and handbags. But, you know, actually, he couldn't control what she did with the money. You can't. You can express a wish who you would like to receive the money, but it's up to them to decide how they take the money. So, so I think there's a lot of conversations about death benefits, especially for people who are in the situation of thinking about, you know, having a lot of money and who are, you know, potentially impacted by these changes in that kind of pre-75 if they do take it as a lump sum. But you don't have to take it as a lump sum. And if you move it into drawdown, then, you know, it becomes more tax efficient that way. But yeah, so I think 10 years of pension freedoms has just meant better conversations and more thought about intergenerational wealth transfer.
I'm going to wrap up now. So thank you very much, everyone, for listening to The Advice Show this week. If you want to get in contact with any questions about this episode, you can contact us at CityWire. So my email is nblackburn@citywire.co.uk. Or you can tweet us. We're at New Model Advisor on Twitter. And Claire, just to say thank you very much again for joining us.
And thank you for having me.
Been great to have you. And we'll see all the listeners next week.
Today is VE Day.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has
landed. Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Marx Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Marx Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Capital at risk.